Welcome to Fast Talk with Vicki Wachtel, where you will learn everything you always wanted to know about real estate, Katie, and life in general, and possibly some things you might not have even thought of. Brought to you by the Tough Talk Radio Network, now here's your host, Vicki Wachtel.
Good morning from bright and sunny Katy, Texas. This morning the sun is shining right in my eyes.
Bright and foggy.
No, the fog's gone.
Well, it was really foggy.
It was really foggy this morning. My husband left at 10 till 6 to catch a plane to Mexico today, and he'll be back tomorrow night, and he'll come in the middle of that ice storm we're going to have.
Will he be smuggling any goodies?
No, he's not going to be down long enough to go get any goodies. He's just down there on business trip. He has to go down there and straighten a few things out, and then he'll be back. And the storm that we got coming in tomorrow, I don't understand. Some people say it's coming in the middle of the night. Some people, the radio says it's coming in tomorrow afternoon. I don't know. Does anybody really know what's going on with this ice storm that's coming in? They're saying that by tomorrow afternoon they could have 2 to 4 inches of ice in Houston. What the hell is that all about?
It's a little north of Houston. But where we are, it could be like
Ryan,
a quarter inch.
Ryan, and Ryan this morning said it was going to be right here in Houston itself.
Well, they're not, like, accredited meteorologists.
I was looking at the, but on the map yesterday, they were showing the ice all the way down to Gallatin.
Well, they're showing
yesterday.
Ice, but 2 to 4 inches is north of us. Then we could, over here, get up to, like, a quarter inch of snow. And that's huge. And if I can get up early enough and steal the snow from my neighbor's yard...
You're going to build a 3-inch snowman.
I am. I'm going to kill it.
I know last week, whenever that storm came through, my daughter's in Louisiana, and she sent a video of her and the kids out playing. They made ice balls and throw it on. Even the 2-year-old got it. Daddy was holding her, so she reached it, and then she threw it. She was so excited to actually throw an ice ball.
That's so cute.
And we're not talking Lafayette, Louisiana. Throwing ice balls. Crazy. There's just so much for global warming. But anyway, so how was your weekend?
That was really, really good, really busy. I was helping a client move. It's not something I normally do. But
full service.
Yeah, full service. You do what you got to do sometimes.
Exactly right. You help where you can.
And it reminded me how much I hate moving, but and how stressful it can be. And when somebody reaches out to you, you reach back. You help them out. That's what people do.
Mm-hmm. We had, I had forgotten that I told my husband I wanted to go to the car show Saturday. And about 3 o'clock, he goes, "Do you still want to go to that car show?" And I'm thinking, "Well, isn't it too late?" He goes, "No, it's open until 9:30. I said, "Well, shoot, let's go." So the boys all had things to do, parties to go to, and different things, and so it was just my daughter and my husband and I, and we headed off for the car show. $10 to get in the gate to park, $10 a person to get in, and I have to tell you people, whoever arranged that car show, you missed the mark, totally missed the mark. I remember going to car shows when I was younger. And you'd see the futuristic. You'd see what was going to happen 5 years from now. You'd see the really nice, fancy cars, you know. This one, no, you see anything you would see out on a car lot right now.
Are you serious?
I'm serious. There was, if somebody said there was something that was for 2015, but that's just not far enough in the future for me. I wanted to see the cars that get up and hover and go around in circles, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you know there's got to be some really incredible stuff on the horizon.
Nothing. The best part of the car show was seeing the old cars that were in the back, but they're all roped off and you can't get to them. And then the Maseratis and things like that, which I could care less about, they had those all roped off, and you could not get to those either. I did sit in a little bit, one of those little bitty cars, not a.
What about the airplane cars?
No, nothing, nothing.
You know, with all
seriously, it was like car dealerships all together in one spot, and I was extremely disappointed to spend $40. And the best part about the whole thing is the popcorn.
With all the advancements they're making with jetpacks and everything.
Not a thing. Not a thing about it.
And you see me flying.
Their big deal, and maybe it's because it's in Texas. The big deal was you could actually drive one of the Dodge Rams or whatever the pickup truck it was, which is not my bag to see these monster pickup trucks. But you could drive this pickup truck over a obstacle course, which like logs. Uh-huh. And a side thing where your car was going on a side, and then you could go up a hill and back down and get your name in a drawing. And then Jeep did the same thing.
Jeep? Jeep, oh, Jeep's been doing that for years.
And the best thing in the Jeep was up there was a guy at the top that was directing them to say, come on, was dancing to the music that the DJ was playing below. The dancing was good. The demo was stupid. I mean, I was very disappointed. The most fun I had was I got in this little tiny, tiny little car. I don't know. It was one of those little things that the clowns drive around. And there was a little bitty kid. He was probably about five or 6 years old behind the steering wheel and actually fit the car. So I got in on the passenger side. Where are we going? He goes, we're going to my cousin's house. Said, what's going on at your cousin's house? We're having a party. Awesome. Are we going to have cake? Yeah, we're going to have cake. Let's go. That was the most fun I had at the whole show. I got to sit down for 2 or 3 minutes because it was huge. 2.5 hours of walking around.
I think about that little kid. He got to drive Miss Daisy.
I know. No kidding. No kidding. So it was fun. I mean, that part of it was not, I mean, it was good for me. It was painful because, you know, I don't do walking. And then we left there and my husband said, you know what, April, take us to the Heights and take us someplace or downtown or someplace and take us to a restaurant we've never been before and entertain us now. So it's like, oh, good, let's entertain the old folks. So she's, oh, I know exactly where to go. So she took it to the Heights and to someplace called, I don't even remember the name of the restaurant now. We walked in, and, of course, it is, you know, 7:30 on a Saturday night, and you know it's going to be packed. And they said it's an hour and 20-minute wait. And she said the food's really, really good. And it was like, okay, can we sit at the bar? Well, you can stand back by the bathrooms because it was so packed. And this is a little small place. And I said, what about sitting on the patio? It's not that cold. It was actually it was in the high 50s, so it really wasn't that bad. We all had jackets, so let's just sit on the patio. We walk out, and it's so closed in, and the cigarette smoke was a combination of that night and the last 3 years. It was horrid. I couldn't. I'm an ex-smoker. Can't smell it. Can't stand it. So that wasn't going to work. So we went back inside, and my daughter called this other place. It was around the corner, so we didn't even have to move our car from the makeshift parking lot that was 2 doors down. We walked through that parking lot, around the corner, and back down, and to a place called Shade. Which must my grandson.
Yeah, I was like, you posted on Facebook dinner at Shades, and I was like, did he move?
Yeah.
To a bar?
And it was so awesome because she called him up, and she said, how long is the wait? And she goes, well, we actually have to have an empty table at the bar. Would you like me to reserve it for you? And she goes, yeah, we'll be there in less than 10 minutes. So they put a reserve sign on there. I didn't think anybody would do that now.
I know, because they just want, you can call anywhere. They're like, you have to show up here.
I know. I was so impressed. Oh, your whole party has to be here before we seat you type crap. I was so impressed by that. And we got in and we sat there, and it took a while. They brought us the menus right away, then our drink menu, and we ordered some drinks. It took a while to get the drinks. And then they finally came back and got our order. Now, Dan was the waiter, our server, and he was the only one in the bar. He had 6 tables plus the bar. So he was pretty busy. I never saw him stop the whole 2.5 hours we were there. 2.5 hours. Never stopped. He was moving constantly. I have to say that part of the slowdown, I think, was because everything had to go into the computer. And that's not – he spent more time at the computer than he did anything else. And I think that is – although it's supposed to help service move better, doesn't always. And so, but the food was amazing. I got a seared, what was it? It was a fish. My mind just went completely blank. Anyway, the fish was really good. It was done on a bed of the strangest coleslaw with a sauce around it was in a curry flavor. And then they put the fish on top of it. And then they put a wasabi over the top of the fish, which, you know, is pretty spicy. And then layers the thinnest sliced cucumber I've ever seen in my life. And when it came, it was a small little portion. I thought, that's not really much for the price. But the portion size was just perfect because I didn't leave a thing on the plate, and I felt so comfortable. I wasn't stuffed.
Mm-hmm.
But it was every single bite. It was just like a party in the mouth. It was
really
fantastic. Oh, my God, it was so good. I will definitely go there, and I don't care if I have to wait 2 hours to get my food. I really don't. It was worth it. And I posted on Yelp. I posted on Facebook. You know, I put pictures on Facebook. Absolutely amazing. Had a wonderful time, and it was good to go back into town. We don't get into Houston enough, and it was good. It was really, really good to get into town. So I did that, and then yesterday was open the doors, open the windows, air out the house, and, man.
It was beautiful yesterday, wasn't it?
Gorgeous.
Absolutely. You get spoiled.
Gorgeous.
And it's so funny because we had a big ice day. You know, like you said, the city closed down on Friday, so the kids didn't go to school or anything. And then yesterday, beautiful. It was in the 70s. It had to be.
It was fantastic. Yeah, I think it did hit 70. And it's that Friday for ice day. Because the kids were home and everybody was home, my husband's home, we actually had movie day. We watched 4 movies on Friday.
Really?
And I can't tell you what they were, but they were all really good. I need to write these things down because I can't remember the names of the movies, but they were all really. One of them was never mind. I'll remember it later. But at any rate, when it was so pretty yesterday, my grandson comes in and he says, "Can we have movie day again?" I said, "No way! Get yourself outside. You need the sunshine."
Little did we know, Tuesday maybe movie day.
Movie day again Tuesday because I think we'll keep the kids home we're going to close the office Tuesday. There's no point. I don't want anybody coming in and taking a chance on getting hurt.
You know, now that Libby's in high school, things are different. You know, and I worry because she missed Wednesday for a tennis tournament, and then Friday for snow day, and now we're looking at another snow day. And I know none of these things are her fault. I just worry that she's missing so much school. How will she get caught up, you know?
Well, they're all going to miss those days.
I know.
Even the teachers, there's nothing they can do about it.
I just keep thinking.
Everybody's going to be.
These grades that they slump, it's costing me every, like, zero or every low grade. It's costing me thousands of dollars in potential scholarship money the child could be getting.
Okay, so quit stressing over that. That she's, what, ninth grade?
Yes.
And you're stressing over scholarship money?
She's 36th in her class out of 480. So for me to be comfortable that by the end that she'll still be top 10, we need to move up. And you know it's easier
and
to move up at the beginning.
That stress that you feel, that is going to permeate into her.
Not
Why
stress.
Would you put that kind of pressure on
her?
Because
she's not doing anything. This is her no effort. She can put some effort and think it through. So what I've done is, because she's 15, she's saving up for a car next year.
Does she have a job?
I'm telling you what I'm doing.
Oh.
Because I don't have time to take her to a job and bring her home. Her job is school. So because she's been doing really bad in geometry, I'm starting to charge her $20 an F, $50 a zero, but I'll pay her $20 an A. So she has a choice. She can sit in study hall and she can study and she can learn. Well, I mean, let's see how motivated she is.
Yeah. No, if a child is motivated by money or a purpose like the car, then that can be motivation.
Well, yeah, because I said you want to.
Didn't work with my kids, unfortunately.
Because I told her when it's time to buy a car, we'll match her $2 to $1 she saved. So I said when you sit down to buy your car next year.
I don't think you can get a car for $75.
I know. That's what I told her. I said, how much money do you want to have saved?
But who are you punishing by not giving her a car?
You're not
punishing yourself because you're going to be driving her around all the time. That's the thing, and they know that.
But
kids are not stupid.
But this
goes
into goal setting. And I'm telling her, I'm teaching her what you taught me. I said, okay, if you wanna save $2,000 before you turn 16 in a year, then what does that look like per week, per month? How are you gonna do that? And you know, so she's really started. Okay, well, I need to meet this goal, and it's helping her. It's a life skill. It's helping her.
Yes, it is. If you can get into their heads and get that, it is the life skill. It really is.
Teaching her that harder work.
We did that with my grandson, who's going. And, you know, he's leaving the 24th.
Oh,
and for the Marines, and we did that same thing with him whenever he was younger. You know, if he wanted some money, the kid wouldn't think twice about going out, making a little card, and hitting the streets, finding jobs. He cleaned out garages. He did mulched flower beds. I mean, he did all kinds of things. If he wanted money right then, he'd go do it.
Uh-huh.
And then he'd spend it.
Uh-huh.
And then he'd have to go find something other. And the thing is, he never learned to save that money. That was the thing. And we did the same thing. You save your money, and we will match it to buy your car.
Uh-huh. Yeah, because we're not going to.
That didn't work.
Because here's how I feel about college education or cars or anything else. If a kid doesn't have skin in the game, they don't respect whatever they were just handed.
That's exactly right. I agree 100% on that. We're going to need to go to break now. And when we get back, we'll talk about skin in the game.
Okay, if you want to call into our show because you want to talk to us about expectations of teenagers or anything else, our number is 347-989-1363, or you can email questions to me at realestateredhead@gmail.com, and we'll be right back.
Are you an entrepreneur? Are you where you want to be? Do you believe that if you build it, they will come? Unfortunately, entrepreneurship doesn't work that way, and that's why you need to read Famous Isn't Enough. In this book, you'll find real-life situations and lessons learned. When all is said and done, there's nothing better than being your own boss. Remember, nothing just happens. You have to put in the work. Famous Isn't Enough is your roadmap. Get your copy today at www.famousisn'tenough.com.
Do you want to know the secret to building a successful business quickly? It's all about taking action, but not just any action. It takes inspired and consistent action to get profits. Join Michelle Sism, the six-figure results lady, as she asks successful entrepreneurs their profitable secrets every Monday at 2 p.m. Central Time on Take Action, Get Profits with Michelle Sism on the Tough Talk Radio Network. If you're ready to take action and get profits, you can find out more about the show at TakeActionGetProfitsRadio.com.
Are you looking to buy, sell, or lease a home? Whether you are ready to complete your first transaction or you are a seasoned investor, Imagine Realty has qualified realtors ready to help you fulfill your real estate needs. Imagine Realty International is a boutique brokerage that specializes in customer service. We market properties from all over the world to people all over the world. Visit us on the web at ImagineRealtyInternational.com or call our office at 832-444-2363. Imagine Realty International, making dreams come true.
And we're back. So what we were talking about, the teenagers and what works and what doesn't. It works for some. It doesn't work for all of them. We tried that with my grandson. We would match him dollar for dollar. And, of course, you know, the time came. He didn't get his license until he was 17 because he didn't have money to buy a car because he never saved any of the money. He made tons of money. He never saved any of it. So we were back to saying, well, all right, fine. And then it was we were hauling him around everywhere, hauling his sister around because she had a job. So we ended up buying a car, and then he pays us back. And he has been making payments on it to pay for the car. But it was like our punishment. We were being punished by him not having a car. Because we had to drive him back and forth to work. We'd have to drive his sister back and forth to work. So once he got the car, he could do all that.
Uh-huh.
And now we've got two more who don't have license, and he's leaving in February, and we're going back to the same thing. They're both going to have jobs, hopefully. One of them does. The other one, and so now I'm going to be the one driving them back and forth because they didn't get their license. Shade will be 18 next month, and Norm will be 17. They still don't have their license.
I don't understand that. Do you know how hard I was begging and chomping at
the I know, me
to
too. What is that?
I don't know.
Kids today, and this, you know, one of the things I wanted to talk about today, I wanted to talk about expectations and how we get messed up by our own expectations and people not meeting our expectations. And did you ever read that book, Great Expectations?
I saw the movie.
Oh, we got a vendor just walked in the door. So. We're on the air right now. Anyway. Okay, so here we are live, and we didn't lock the door, so the guy just walks in, so Cordy's taking care of him. Cordy, lock the door. Live. This is live. This is reality, and the expectation would have been that we would have a show that wouldn't be interrupted. So if you don't do what you're supposed to do, your expectations can be messed up.
That's okay. I just got to pretend snowball.
Cool. Is that a candle?
It's a stress reliever.
Oh gosh, we need that, don't we? So anyway, I never saw the movie and I never saw the books. It's on my list.
Uh-huh.
You know, I have on my bucket list of books that I want to read. That's one of them.
If I'm not mistaken, I was in high school and I went to see the movie with my good friend's grandparents. And I was
who's in the movie?
Gwyneth Paltrow, I think. And I was so embarrassed because they were showing, you know, art of naked redheads. I wanted to die.
So your expectation of the movie was not about nudes.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. And it's funny because we take that so for granted what our expectations are. And like your expectation for your daughter is that if you put these goals in front of her, she will adhere to them and she will learn from them. And if she doesn't, how does that affect you?
Well, you know, Libby's always been a different kind of kid and a different kind of thing.
But I'm not just talking about Libby. I'm saying when you set up an expectation of the way things should be and it doesn't happen, how are you affected by any expectation?
Well,
You had an expectation last month of having three closings because you had it scheduled.
Right.
They all fell out.
I like to think that a lot of it was out of my control. There was just nothing I could do. But there were things that I could have done. Like, I turn around, I reflect on what could have been done to make the situation better. And some things that I could have done to make the situation better are to budget my money better. Because you're not surprised when your HOA fees come at the end of the year. You're not surprised when Christmas comes at the end of every year. You're not surprised that your kid's birthday is, you know, at the beginning of the year. And you're not surprised that HAR dues, super key dues, all those things, you know, you have bills coming up at the end of the year every year. So one thing that I could do better is budget my money better so that there are no shortfalls and things like that that just don't make
sense.
So,
so what I'm gathering from what you're saying is that when you have expectations and from somebody else's and you don't have control over it and that falls apart, use that as a learning experience to rethink the way you should have done, so that when your expectations were not met, you wouldn't have been hurt as bad.
Yeah, basically.
That's very good.
How to turn around and reflect and what could have been done better.
Yeah, that's very good. Because I think that, you know, like the expectation of going to the car show.
Uh-huh.
I had an expectation of that it'd be fun. It'd be a fun way to spend some time with the family. I thought all the boys would go. They'd really get a kick out of that. Well, they had other plans. And I just thought that, you know, that this would be a great way to get to do some family bonding and go see some really cool cars.
Uh-huh.
And my expectations were completely blown out of the water when the boys said, no, we got parties to go to.
Parties?
Yeah, they both. The youngest and the oldest went to one party and the other one went to another. So it's like, okay, you guys got parties to go to. And I said, well, are we still going? And Dad said, sure, let's go. So, you know, our expectation would be that it won't take as long because without the boys. But I still had this expectation that I'd get in there. I wanted to see the Bentleys. I wanted to see the Rolls Royce.
Uh-huh.
You know, I wanted to see cars that I'm not going to see driving down my street.
Uh-huh.
And I was very disappointed, that I didn't get to see that. You know, we actually see Ferraris drive down our street. I mean, there's a guy on 1463, lives off 1463, who's one of the Texans players. He has two. So we see Ferraris all the time. Ain't no big deal to see a Ferrari or a Lamborghini or something like that. We see that.
Do you know what I see in my neighborhood a lot? Not a lot. It's like
minivans.
No. It's like a very, very occasional, but you do see it sometimes. The drummer for ZZ Top lives just right off Pitts Road. And so sometimes you'll see him out, and he has a personalized license plate, so you know it's him and his Mercedes tooling around. He does not like you gawking at him at red lights. He doesn't like you to have a stupid starstruck
dress. Did you ask if he had any great coupons?
Pardon me. He doesn't roll down his window.
See, that's the thing is, you have an expectation of what you should, and when he's not met, then I got disappointed, and then I felt I was ripped off. And then I was in a bad mood.
Yeah, I'm thinking we'll start sending out Christmas
cards. So 2.5
cards.
Hours I walked around when I don't normally walk. I was in a lot of pain, and I didn't get to see anything I wanted to see. So my expectations were completely not met. And
yeah.
So, yeah, and I think I got to thinking about that this morning. If we set up expectations that based on, now, I was basing that on old car shows that I had gone to that had that kind of stuff. You'd have the girl in the evening gown with the thing goes around and around with the speaker talking to you and all that stuff. We saw one going around, car going around. We saw one girl with a speaker talking, and she had a black suit on. I mean, it just wasn't what you expected.
Not enough objectification of cars or women.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. No nudies. I mean, you don't know. No, none of the girls in the bikinis laying up there, you know.
Well, I was busy that night.
I'm sorry. You could have made some money that night doing that because they needed.
They would have thought that they put a snowman in a bikini.
Well, just because you're a ginger just means you're a little bit pale.
not
necessarily a snowman.
Body's not quite bikini ready, and by not quite, I mean for 20 years.
So anyway, get back into the expectation thing. You know, as realtors, sometimes I think that we're dealing with buyers, we're dealing with sellers, we're dealing with inspectors, we're dealing with the title company, we're dealing with the lenders, we have expectations of what everybody's job is, and in our arena, I think we do a very good job of meeting or having them meet our expectations because we know what to expect. But when buyers come in or sellers, a seller who's lived in the house for 25 years and hasn't dealt with real estate doesn't have a clue what's going on now. A brand new buyer, no matter what the age, because, you know, we've worked with buyers in their 60s that have never bought a house before.
Uh-huh.
So their expectations are totally different than what ours are. And sometimes I wonder, do we actually meet their expectations and do we take the time to ask them what they are?
You know, and another thing is, you know, it's very easy to set up your HAR account, even though I haven't been able to figure it out, to get ratings from your clients when the transaction is complete,
mm-hmm.
how you did, you know, to reflect. We should give realtor-to-realtor report cards because having a realtor who can work with other realtors, that's a big part of having a good realtor. And people behind, like buyers, sellers, they don't know that. If I'm a realtor who absolutely will not cooperate or doesn't see that other realtor's emergency is my emergency now or this transaction action might not go through, if I can't get a form signed quick enough or returned quick enough, if I don't have any urgency, if I don't respond to their calls, your deal might die. I'll never own up to it, you know. It'll be their fault they did it. You know, you'll never know. But you really do need a realtor who can work with other realtors.
And you know, being on the committees at HAR, I brought that up last year, that when we're talking about the way we, our feedback from our buyers and sellers for our rating systems, I actually opted out of the rating system. I had a very good rating, but the last three that I got were not to my, what I expected to get out of it because they were brand new buyers and they didn't know the program, and so they gave me what I felt wasn't an adequate rating. In their mind must have been, but in my mind it wasn't, so I opted out because I don't want somebody judging me on those last three. When I stopped really working with buyers and sellers, and so that my whole rating system up to that point, I had a perfect five for 4 years. Perfect five. Okay, nobody walks on water.
Uh-huh.
So when I got my first poor one, which I consider a poor one, because it's a 5 point. So I opted out of it, and maybe I should not have. But if you get three in a row who are saying I didn't meet their expectations, but it was something that happened that was beyond my control, like the appraiser the inspection not giving the report that they wanted,
mm-hmm.
or answers that they asked for, and they rated me on that, that's not right.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I did bring that up about. We actually, agent to agent, we know what to expect, and our expectations should be met.
Uh-huh.
They're not going to do that.
No,
flat
even if it was
that.
Just reported back to your broker, just, you know, because here's why I don't do the rating system, because by and large, all my clients have loved me, but you always get that one person who can trash you with a bad review.
And there's always that person. There's always one of mine when I call them and ask them why they gave me a 4 when nothing went wrong with the deal. Not a thing. They got in exactly what they wanted. They got the price they wanted. Everything was smooth as silk. Why did I get a 4? His answer was, well, nobody's perfect. And if I gave you a 5, that would mean that you were perfect. Okay, so see, they're judging me based on their expectations and their guidelines, not on what I did, but on what they think.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's subjective. And, like, even as a teacher, when you're grading a class, grades are subjective. A lot of parents don't know that. You know, we write our kids really hard. You know, you're making a D in there. Well, nobody's making above a C. You know, well, that's a problem with the teacher, you know, or she gave this test last month and nobody passed it. Well, one kid passed it, but everyone else made F. Okay, well, that's a problem teaching. But that teacher, a lot of parents don't know, she could opt to count that grade or not count that grade. And if she was really reflecting on how she was teaching, she wouldn't, because she would realize, hey, I failed the kids here. They need an opportunity. I need to reteach it. They need an opportunity to prove that they've mastered this skill. You know, but even, you know, everything's subjective, and grades are a different form of rating system, and they're subjective, too.
Yeah, and it's not, and a sad part about the whole system of schooling, I think, is not as adequate as it could be, but my expectation of the way things have done whenever I was a kid, because, it was, you know, let's face it, that was a long time ago. that the way we did school and the way they do school now, I'm not satisfied that the education that the kids are getting today is better than what I got, you know, 50 years ago. I'm just not satisfied.
I believe when I was in school, it dipped to an all-time low, and they had to find a way to dig out. But the way they're digging out is one size fits all, and that just doesn't work.
It doesn't work. And you know what? There's the schools that are going to the iPad and using the iPad for training. Their grades. There was one, I think it was right here in Houston. I want to say no. Is it? I don't know where it was at. I saw it on the news the other day where they were. It was in New Jersey. And they went in and they were teaching them on the iPads, and their ratings, their scores doubled in less than 6 months. Doubled.
They must have been really low performing. How can you?
It was an inner city school.
Oh.
And they gave them iPads, and now these kids are really interested in learning because it's on an iPad.
Yeah.
Why are we doing books? Nobody's going to open the stupid book. Here in Katy, they
get
two books. They do two books in Katy, one for home, one for school, so that you don't have to haul them back
but
and forth.
But you'd probably be really surprised.
I know, they don't teach from them.
We weren't allowed to, because you teach to that test, and if you find out an objective's on that test, that's what you teach. And the textbooks,
that's wrong.
They're trying to catch up, but since you only adopt textbooks every 5 to 6 years, but those objectives change nearly every year.
And that's why it needs to be totally internet-based. Totally.
And so I know that Fort Bend ISD is doing an iPad-based program, and a couple years ago they were paying teachers to come in the summer and write lessons on those iPads so that there could be, you know, a whole schmear of things mm-hmm. where they would search for websites and do other things.
We got to go to break.
Oh, yeah. You can check out our other hosts on the Tough Talk Radio Network. At toughtalkradionetwork.com. If you'd like to be a guest on our show, you can go to www.fasttalkwithvickywachtel.com, and we'll be right back.
Life's Issues with Lloyd Rosen, a show that delves into the hot topics of life. Lloyd takes life's issues head-on with hard-hitting interviews with professionals such as doctors and teachers, as well as those that have experienced life's alerting issues, whether professional, emotional, or physical. Lloyd wants to help those that are searching for answers to living a successful life. Life's Issues airs every Friday at 1:30 p.m. Central Time, right here on the Tough Talk Radio Network. Find out more at lifesissueswithlloydrosen.com.
Did you know that an estimated 52 million Americans listened to internet radio in the last month, or that weekly internet radio audience has increased 60% over the last year, and that more than 8 in 10 people are online from any location? Tough Talk Radio Network is a company dedicated to providing a platform that allows opportunities for guests, hosts, and sponsors to market themselves through the internet radio medium, where they can be heard by millions. To find out how Tough Talk Radio Network can help you, go to toughtalkradionetwork.com.
Are you looking to buy, sell, or lease a home? Whether you are ready to complete your first transaction or you are a seasoned investor, Imagine Realty has qualified realtors ready to help you fulfill your real estate needs. Imagine Realty International is a boutique brokerage that specializes in customer service. We market properties from all over the world to people all over the world. Visit us on the web at ImagineRealtyInternational.com or call our office at 832-444-2363. Imagine Realty International, making dreams come true.
And we are back. And we were talking about iPads and lessons and schools moving with the times. By and large, they're trying, but it's a bureaucracy, and technology is moving so fast.
Which is why we need to be all web-based. I mean, it's just not, there's no point. I think we're doing our children a disservice by not making everything web-based right now. I mean, the money they spend on these books, which is like $80 a kid.
At least.
Oh, no, $80 a course.
A book.
A course, yes. So if you're doing that, if you're doing $80 a course, and you got 5 to 6 courses a semester, I mean, that easily will pay for an iPad in 1 year. 1 year.
Yeah. Well, I mean.
And you can pass them on.
They have class sets, and they have smart boards, you know, up in front of the, instead of like a dry erase or a chalkboard. You know, they have a lot of interactive things going on now. But, you know, it just it moves.
I still
slow.
Think it's time. I mean, I think that I think education has got to get into this century, and it just needs. It's time to do the web. I still think they need to go to a place so they can communicate with other people.
Uh-huh.
But I think the idea that the way that they're doing it is, I don't think is meeting their needs, and I don't think it's preparing them for the future. I think it's actually held them back. I think it's actually holding them back.
One thing in Libby's geography class is a young teacher. She prides herself on being, you know, technology proficient. And what she'll do is she'll ask a question to the class, and they have these little electronic, they look like almost like hand calculators or something. And everybody types in their answer, and she can tell right away who gets it, who doesn't, who had the right answer, who doesn't. And she has all these amazing technological things, but she's young. And so she doesn't utilize them. You know, she'll post the vocabulary and think that the kids will just go and check it, you know, or something like that. But she's really leaps and bounds ahead of most teachers. However, she can't answer an email.
She doesn't know how to answer it.
She won't answer my email.
Or she just won't answer it. There's a difference between knowing how and not doing it.
Ugh.
It's like agents not answering their phone.
She's a poor communicator.
Oh, God. See, that's one of the main gripes that I have. And they did a study. They took through the National Real Estate Post, they posted a couple of weeks ago, that the number one gripe of buyers and sellers with their agent, the number one complaint they had is they wouldn't answer the phone. Poor communication and letting them know what's going on. We carry our phones in our hands. Our phone is always on us. There is no reason and no excuse for not answering it.
That's right. And I think realtors forget, yes, there are clients who are more needy than others. But
you set their expectations right from the start. Yeah, and when I was working with buyers and sellers, and I know that I will get a lot of negative feedback from other agents saying that I don't, this is not the proper way to do business. But when I was working with buyers and sellers, if my phone rang, I answered my phone. And then I would cut it short. I would give you, let me call you back. I'm in a meeting right now. Let me call you back. But what happened was when I'd get off the phone, I would go to whoever was a buyer or a seller, whoever I was talking to, and I'd say, God, I know you must think that it's extremely rude that I answer the phone, and I apologize for that you think it's rude, but I just want you to be aware that when you call me, I do answer my phone, because you're not going to call me unless it's important. It's like I teach my children, don't cry unless you're bleeding. Don't call me unless it's important. Nobody calls me to chit-chat. So when that phone rings and you're calling me, I know it's important. I will answer the phone. Right off the bat, I set their expectations, and mine as well. I don't expect to hear from them unless there's a problem. They're not going to call me unless there's a problem. But they know when they call, I'll answer. And I never had any complaints from any client in over 130 transactions. Not one complaint was because I answered my phone. And I also didn't get any complaints that they couldn't get a hold of me.
That's my favorite thing about you as a broker. If I have a question, you know, either I text it to you or I'll call you with it, but you're right there. And if you can't get to me right away, you're with it pretty shortly. And I try to pattern that for my clients too. If, you know, I have one client, he prefers email, but we'll email sometimes 50 times a day because he'll have a little question. But you think about it, if you're on a phone call, a 5-minute, 10-minute phone call, that's 6, 7, 8 questions back and forth.
Right.
You know, and it's not every day. Some days, you know, we'll have long conversations back and forth, because he'll have, you know, a laundry list of questions. And some days, nothing at all, and I'm wondering, you know, something's wrong with my day. I've been working with this client a long time. You know, where he's at? What is he doing?
The email to find out, well, you still alive?
Yes.
Do I need to send flowers? That was my favorite thing whenever I didn't hear from somebody for a while. If I send several messages and I don't hear from here back, whoever I'm trying to get in touch with, my next thing is, where do I send the flowers? Because I'm sure you must have died if you haven't contacted me back.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's my little sarcastic way of letting them know that my time is just as important as yours, and I need you to get back in touch with me. So, but it is one of my main gripes. And so the public, they feel the same way. There is no reason. And the idea that it's rude to answer your phone when you're with a client showing houses, how is it rude to put your client that you already have aside for a new client that you're working with? To me, that's rude.
Yeah.
But it's my way of doing business, and it worked for me, and it may not work for everybody else, but if the number one complaint is they're not hearing back from you, and it's because you don't want to take the time to answer the phone because you don't want to be rude, you'd rather lose the business than be rude, then I think maybe you should rethink the way you do things business.
Yeah, I mean, and I try not to answer my phone, but I very rarely have a client call during while I'm showing houses. So that is not really usually an issue for me.
Yeah.
But I am an excellent communicator. I know that people need to – this is a huge purchase, maybe the most expensive purchase a person will ever make, and they're on the hook for 30 years for this purchase if it's not cash. So they want to know that they have somebody there to answer questions. And what does the realtor do? Maybe we didn't find you the house, but we babysit that transaction. We make sure that when that contract's written that the title company knows that the survey needs to be ordered earlier this time. Or we make sure that the mortgage person knows, hey, we only have 21 days. We want that appraisal done before 21 days. Because if you're not going to finance, we don't want him losing his earnest money. You know, we do those kind of things that keep things running smoothly that are largely behind the scenes. But, you know, you have to be a good communicator and you have to be organized and keep your ducks in a row to be able to do that.
That's exactly right. And it's it's you're setting the expectations right off the bat. When I worked with when I first started the first year, I closed 47 transactions. Working with, and they were mostly sellers. I got three buyers that year. So working with mostly sellers, their expectation is when they have a showing, they expect a response back from the other agent. Not usually within 30 minutes, they expect to have some kind of response back. It's not going to happen that soon. But I would sit down with them right off the bat and to explain to them that I will be in touch with you every Monday. And if we've had closings, I mean, if we had showings and we didn't get any feedback, I will be contacting the agent. I will have some kind of feedback for you. And then I would go back and let it go. And so every Monday they knew that I was going to call them. So they wouldn't call me back and say, 30 minutes after the showing, did you hear anything back yet? Because I told them that that's what I would be doing. And that was the only way that I could do that and keep my sanity and keep the business flowing with that many transactions going at a time or that many listings going at a time, was to make sure that I laid out their what they could expect from me and what I could expect from them.
Right. And like we were talking about, a lot of people feel like, okay, I want to go look at this house. I want to buy it. I'll just call the listing agent or I'll just call, you know, the first realtor who answers their phone. Does it matter who you choose as your realtor? And it absolutely does. I heard a nightmare story the other week from my daughter's friend. And she said, her dad said, he called somebody. He was out looking at new houses. And he didn't want to bother me because our daughters were friends. And he just didn't want to bring, you know, me in on, I don't know what. He regrets it now. That's the important thing. The realtor he calls, the first one he calls, shows up. I'm not even kidding. She should be reported to TREC. She has throw up down the one side of her car because she had been out all night at a strip club with her boyfriend. But not only that, she tells him that. Like, it's not bad enough that she could be like, you know what, my kid was sick, and you know, or just make up an
there
excuse.
You go. Oh.
Right.
But you can't. You have to give her credit for being honest.
Do you?
Yeah.
And then he said, well, we signed the contract in the office. I never saw her again or heard from her again until closing. And that's, you know, people deserve more than that. You know, I can't tell you enough that makes me crazy. I know that realtors play a different role in new construction, but you don't just disappear. You know, you still need to be there. You still need to keep contact with them.
And it goes back to your expectations, what his expectations were. He should have called her. If he expected her to be in constant contact, he should have let her know that I expect you to be in constant contact. Let me know what's going on. Because I haven't bought a new house before. I don't know what the next steps are. And so I need you to stay in contact with him that, you know, what's going on. I mean, I knew construction a couple that lived in they were coming in from, I think it was Midland, because I did several relocations last year. I would actually went out on the job site because they were building, and I would take pictures once a week at the sunset, because it was important to see what the sunset was. So I would take a picture of the house showing the sunset every week while the house was being built, from the time they graded the land, built the foundation, set it up as each week she could see progress on it. Then she finally came in. Now, my expectation was when they came in to do their walkthrough, they'd call me so I could go look at the house too, and they didn't even bother to call me. Because she says, well, I figured that you'd already seen it because you were there every week.
That's just crazy.
I know.
But nowadays it takes so long for a slab to even be poured. I mean, you're going to be taking 4 months of once a week pictures of the mess in.
Yeah.
It's frustrating. And that's an expectation builders need to set. People coming in buying dirt. They need to come in and say, look, we're going to tell you it's 2 to 3 weeks because we need you to hurry up and get your choices in. But the fact of the matter is it's going to take a while for that slab to be poured, and here's why. And then people won't be going crazy wondering why there's been no progress.
And that's exactly right, because they think there is no progress when it's just dirt. But the fact is there's a lot of things that go on behind that, permits and the zoning things. And sometimes, like, we had a new construction, but it was in a new new division of a subdivision. And you would assume that if all the permits and gas lines and everything had gone to the other, that this would be a no-brainer. But it was delayed. The everything was delayed on that whole area because they hadn't run the gas lines yet. So they had to get, and it was county, and it crossed over into another county. So you had to have two counties.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and that happens. So I call up the builder, and I say, okay, what's the delay? And the salesperson tells me, oh, this is what we're having to deal with. Gotcha. Call my client up. They understood completely. Okay, now, how much farther out are we looking at for closing? We were looking at, if we got it by this date, the approval and the permits to do with the gas line by this date, and it was scheduled by this date, we would only have to extend out for 3 weeks. And we were lucky that if that's what happened.
You are lucky.
But it's staying in constant contact with that salesperson, because the salesperson isn't going to call the buyers and say, oh, by the way, we've got a delay. Because they might have 15 buyers, 16 buyers, and they got salespeople, and they got people coming in every day. If you're working with a realtor, that's your realtor's job.
Right, and they don't tell you, hey, because we wait till we have 4 or 5 houses to build at once, you know,
exactly.
Put crews together. They don't tell you
because so that they can keep the crews moving.
Right, and they don't tell you, we don't even own that lot yet, so that's going to be time to close on it. They don't tell. It's written in the contract in the fine print, but it's not just readily out there and known.
Right.
So
new construction, if anybody's out there thinking about new construction can be extremely frustrating. And by the time the house is finished, you could wish that you had never got into the deal. There's just so many ways it can go wrong. It is not something that's like, oh, I'm going to build my dream home. And you get this starry-eyed look on your face, I'm building my dream home.
Uh-huh.
By the end of it, you're going to look like the Wicked Witch of the West because you're so frustrated about everything that went wrong and you want to kill everybody in sight.
You do. I mean, I'm telling you, you're sitting in there with them, they're like, well, before we can write a contract, we have to know your house is for sale. Well, my house is in a neighborhood that sells really quick. Well, we still need a listing agreement on it within 10 days. Okay,
yeah.
But you don't pour the foundation for 4 months.
Right, and we can't sell our house and say, okay, we will take your offer on the house, but we can't close for 9 months.
You know, yeah, at minimum, what they could do is offer at least a list of apartment complexes that will do a short-term lease.
Exactly. This morning I was reading through one of the websites that I go in and answer questions from buyers and sellers, and there was the question was, we've had 6 months or 6 years with this lender, and we're thinking about buying our new house. Should we stay with the same lender? So the questions, I read the questions from other people as they come down, the answers from other people, and it got about 5 down into it whenever he answered back and said, well, actually what we're wanting to do is build. We want to find some land and we want to build. And so, I mean, and I wasn't even going to put an answer on here all because there's so many people that said the same thing that, you know, it doesn't matter which lender you go with. Just because you have good credit with that one lender doesn't mean that you can't use that same credit
uh-huh.
with somebody else. And that's the way the line of the answers were going until I read that and then nothing about what his actual plan was. So I felt like I needed to jump in and say, okay, first of all, if your actual plan is to buy land and then build a house, that's a whole different ballgame, because if you're trying to get a loan for construction and then buy, it may be structured so that you may have actually two loans going at one time. You got the loan for the land, and then you'll wrap that back around and put it in the loan for the actual construction, but the construction loan would pay out in 3 payments to the contractor. I mean, there's a lot that goes into that, and have you found your builder? Have you found your land? Because not all builders go to all land. And have you really checked into that part of it? And this is when you really do need a realtor.
That's right, you do.
Because you need somebody who's dealt with this before, who understands the process and can walk you through it.
We have to go to break, but we'll talk more about that when we get back. If you have questions, the number to the show is 347-989-1363, or you can email them to me at realestateredhead@gmail.com. We'll be right back.
Making Life Easy is an electrifying and positive talk show filled with conversation to embrace the path for parents raising teenagers. Based on teachings from The Lesson Plan, author, parent, and teacher Gwen Gustav welcomes professionals, parents, and teenagers to the show to guide listeners on an educational journey. No matter what the subject, communication is the answer. Join Gwen on Making Life Easy Wednesday evenings from 5 to 6 p.m. Central Standard Time on the Tough Talk Radio Network. For more information, go to MakingLifeEasyWithGwenGustav.com.
So you think you're tough enough for Tough Talk with Tony Gambone? Tony knows how to dish it out. Can you take it? Tony Gambone is a communicator, mentor, and entrepreneur whose tough style and generous spirit quickly garnered recognition in many a competitive arena. Now he's bringing his intelligence and knowledge to you as a hard-hitting radio talk show host and thought leader. Tune in and see for yourself. Tough Talk with Tony Gambone. It's a sure thing. To find out more, go to Tough Talk with Tony Gambone.
Would you like to be more up to date with the real estate market? Do you have some nagging questions you want answered by experts who don't have anything to gain or lose by telling you a straight answer? Tune in to Fast Talk with Vicki Wachtel and get the latest on this fast-paced market. Start your Mondays off well-informed by listening to Vicki's Tell It Like It Is brand of wisdom. Listen live Mondays, 8:30 a.m. on the Tough Talk Radio Network by going to fasttalkwithvickiwachtel.com. Miss the show but want to go back and listen? That's okay. Just visit fasttalkwithvickiwachtel.com to catch up on past episodes. Fast Talk Mondays, 8:30 a.m. Central.
And we're back. So what were we talking about?
We were fired up and passionate about needed realtors for new construction loans. And, you know, we probably need to have someone on the show to explain that whole process of building on your own lot with an independent custom builder and the financing and every aspect that goes into it.
Yeah, we don't see a lot of that around here, mainly because we have so many major subdivisions that everybody buys in and you can't buy your own lot in there. But there is little pockets of little areas where you can find an acre or two that are unrestricted, not part of a subdivision, that you could go in and bring in a custom builder and build a house. I see a lot of it done back up in the hill country. It's done farther west from us. It's done out in Galveston.
It's done inside the loop a lot.
Down inside the loop a lot, yes. So, but not so much out where we're at. But you're right. There would be, put that on your list. Contact somebody who understands the process of going through that, because it can be very be kind of scary to know that you know you're taking out these loans and in the way that the process, because it doesn't work like a regular loan.
No, it doesn't. And people think, well, I'll just buy this lot and I'll take a loan out on it. Well, do you know most mortgage companies will not loan on land? It's hard to get, and you have to have a huge down or bigger down payment for that lot. And they want to know you're going to build on it and within a certain number of years. They don't think that they want to let you hold it for 7 years, 15 years, 30 years till you retire.
Right.
They don't want it sitting there.
And there's areas, like if you go to Fulshear, if you go to Western Lakes, you could buy a lot out there. Now, there at one time, I don't know, they may have changed now, but at one time, you didn't have a time limit on it. But then there's in one area, but then another area you had to build within 3 years in the same subdivision. So, you know, that, or the same gated area. So, I mean, there is a lot that goes into it, and if you're just out there on your own trying to find this information, you're going to waste a lot of time.
That's
and
right.
And if you're working with a realtor to do it, you're going to get the realtor services at no charge to you.
Yeah, people don't understand that a lot. You know, if you're a buyer, realtors are free to you. You know, sellers pay us, but they're not going to... I have a piece of land listed in the inner loop, and people call me all the time, and they'll be like, well, just send me a contract. And I'll say, well, if you're not a, are you a realtor? If you're not a realtor, I can't just send you a contract. But I can, you know, let my broker assign a realtor to you, or you can pick any realtor in the world you want, and they can help you write the offer, and it's 100% free to you because the seller pays, and they still won't do it. No, I do it all myself all the time.
These are investors or?
Well, yeah.
Fordham all to me next time they call.
I'll do that.
Yeah, because if they're people that buy lots, and if they're builders that buy lots, and they can represent themselves. But thank you for protecting us, because it's better if they have somebody. But you're right. You know, they can. They don't have to have a realtor. They can do it on their own if they think they know what they're doing. More power to them.
But I mean, we don't want to get a contract in that's not a standard contract.
No.
That, you know, doesn't protect both parties, and you know, there's things that we are trained and go to trainings to know to do, and like I've said,
everybody.
To make the transaction go smoothly, so that my seller doesn't have to hire an attorney, so the buyer doesn't have to hire an attorney, just to get the contracts through and the offers submitted. You know, anybody who receives any kind of contract that has anything to do with such a giant transaction, you're going to want an attorney to review it to make sure you're not losing your shirt, to make sure you're not doing.
And I really want to point out that if you are signing a contract to buy a property, would you at least read what you're signing? I had one of the agent's clients call me over the weekend in a frantic because they hadn't paid the foreclosure and they hadn't put up their earnest money yet, and they were way past their option period, and in the wanted to know, do we still have to put up the earnest money? Because it says on the contract, they finally got around to reading the contract, that if they withdrew because they couldn't get their mortgage in time, then they would lose their earnest money. And it was a large amount of earnest money. And I had to sadly tell them, point blank, you're going to lose it anyway. You better write the check because you're going to lose the deal. You are in default because you haven't already paid it. You're supposed to pay it within 48 hours. You haven't paid it. They can take you to court right now, and you could pay 3 to 4 times as much. You can't play with these things. Read your contract. If it says you've got to pay it in 24 to 48 hours, write the check or don't sign the contract.
Right, and where was that other realtor insisting that these timelines be followed? You know, if one realtor doesn't know, you rely on the other one to guide you, and that's the thing. If you're such a hot shot that you're listing bank foreclosures, you should be cracking a whip. You should be, you know.
And, you know, the fact of the matter is they obviously didn't care.
Yeah.
The title company hadn't received it, and the title company was the one that actually sent the notice to them saying that the money has to be received.
You know, and I found.
And it's in the contract. It's like, why are you signing something you haven't read?
You know, I used to think when I was a new realtor, went behind the ears yet, that title companies did make sure everything stayed on a timeline, but they are so busy that you...
It's not their job.
Yeah, you have to make sure, hey, did you know this? They don't know an amendment's been signed if they don't receive it. You know, I just want to point out to you that on this date the survey needs to be ordered. On this date, you know, is the option ends. On this date, because I feel like it helps them maybe if they have a calendar that they're writing things down on or whatever, but it's up to the realtor to make sure that those deadlines are met, and not that you call your client on the day of and have you done this, that you get them ready for it. Okay, well, this week this is what needs to be done. So they can start it, you know, early, because things just don't happen instantly.
So the title company job is to hold in escrow the earnest money and to open title. That's their job.
We are down to 7 seconds left in the show. It has really flown by.
Wow. Okay, my expectation that this was going to be a very slow-moving show.
Never.
It actually moved very, very quickly, including the interruption. So, but you know what? Meet your expectations, or get people to meet your expectations. What I want to get across today is, if you don't tell them what your expectations are, there's no way they can meet them. And if they don't meet them, that's on you.
I couldn't have said it better myself. Talk to you next week, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in to this edition of Fast Talk with Vicki Wachtel, brought to you by the Tough Talk Radio Network. A special thanks to all of our sponsors. If you'd like to be a sponsor or a guest,
please visit TuffTalkRadioNetwork.com.